My name is Mali Noko, and welcome to the Mali Noko Podcast. I'm a farmer, and I created this podcast to discuss all things agriculture. I will be interviewing and having in-depth conversations with industry experts such as farmers, scientists, agronomists, agri-tech specialists, to policymakers and investors. Basically, anyone you can think of in agriculture and across its value chain. So let's dive right into today's episode. Curtis, thank you so much for coming on to the Mbali Noko podcast. I'm excited for our conversation because I followed your journey as a co-founder and as entrepreneur of Kula. And it's been quite an interesting one. And I've listened to a few interviews that you've done on other podcasts. And I could just definitely relate to your story, to your background, to your entrepreneurial journey. But, for many of my podcast listeners who don't know who Caritas is, maybe just take us a brief background into who you are. And I know that you're not an average entrepreneur in the agricultural sector. Basically, what I mean is that you didn't grow up in a farming community or from a farming background. You know, you are literally a mover and shaker that saw an opportunity in their farming space, and you obviously took a full advantage of it. So maybe just give us a brief background of who Caritas is.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Mbali. Always a pleasure. Caritas is a I grew up in Lokshin in Kangala, RTP, Section B 7036. I grew up there all my life. First lived in a shack, then lived in an RDP house. And I think just throughout my life, I've been an entrepreneur, but it was never given a name at the time. I think it was a means of survival. It was a means of getting by. I've done lots of stuff from since I was very little. Just to get stuff like Christmas clothes. I think it's the classic story of a black child. I always share the story of how, my dad sort of pulled what I call a Goku. If you used to watch Dragon Ball Z back in the day, Goku would take his two fingers and he would put them between his eyes and he would disappear. And because he pulled the Goku on me and my mother, I had to learn a lot of stuff from an early age. So, I used to sell wire cars growing up. I used to sell sweets in class, and I think throughout that process, this was never given a name. It was never called entrepreneurship. It was a way of doing things. It was a way of getting by. I think only when I got to varsity, I did fairly well in high school and got into the Alan Gray Orbis Foundation Scholarship. And I think they really started giving what I'd been doing my whole life a name. They called it entrepreneurship, and sort of made it a real thing. And that's when, that's when I met Matthew. And I think him and I shared, very similar values. And we actually started our first business together in first year of varsity. I'd love to tell you that we started because we wanted to, make change and do all sorts of, change the world, type stuff. But we just wanted to be cool on campus, Initially, we went into entrepreneurship because we wanted to be recognized and to be cool at some level. And I think the more work we did, we realized how it impacted people. I think by second year, I was running two businesses, actually. One of them was a clothing business back home. And I think that business really hit me because we had about 15 people working for us. And just seeing those people put bread on the table, look after their children based on something you had done, I think it really struck me. And it changed it from being just about Caritas looking after himself, but realizing that not only taking care of my mother, but I could take care of other people's mothers directly or indirectly. And I think, entrepreneurship is a bug that's really bit me. And it's something that I'm absolutely passionate about.
Great. So how did you and Matthew come about incorporating Kula? Like, what opportunity do you see in the market? And What was the intention with Kula initially when you both started?
Yeah. So Kula, you know, again, you know, with most stories, you know, the founders come up with the idea, you know, the founders have, they get struck by lightning or they have an epiphany, eureka moment. I think Kula was quite different. I think we had run our first business, which was a consulting slash financial education business. And in running that business, we felt that, you know, man, this wasn't something that we could dedicate our lives to. It wasn't something that we could dedicate our being to. And we were always looking for something that we could really throw all of our energies into. And Matt had the opportunity to go to Israel, you know, I think 2016. And he just came back talking about all the cool things that he had seen that side, you know, all the cool agricultural innovations. And actually, we are both numbers people. So I did actuarial science at UCT. Matt did a CA accounting. So we started looking at the numbers, you know, and the numbers were incredibly fascinating. I mean, the fact that Africa has more than half of the world's arable land, you know, you've got, I think, 570 million farms across the world. You know, you've got, you know, Africa having most of the world's arable land, most of the population being farmers. And just you're looking at this industry that can reach the most marginalized sections of the world than better than any other industry. You know, more than half of the population in Africa depend on agriculture for a small scale income. I mean, for an income. And even across the world, you know, agriculture can reach where many industries can't reach. And that's when the first penny dropped. And once that penny dropped, we knew two things. We knew that this industry was big. We knew that this industry was important. We didn't know what we were going to do at the time. The next step that we took was we actually spent good time on the ground with farmers. So farmers out in Makapanstad, around Hammanskraal, farmers out around Soweto and Walkerville. And the idea here, Bali, was just to be a fly on the wall, to observe the way they went about their daily business. And that's when the penny dropped, when we saw the challenges around market access, you know, looking at the fact that farmers can only really, you know, a lot of emerging farmers can only really sell their produce via the physical fresh produce markets. And I think, you know, you and I both know the challenges that they face there. You know, the products are sold on consignment. So the farmer is not guaranteed that the products is even going to sell. Two, on pricing, they only find out the price on the day. So they're not sure what price their product is going to sell at. There's this big lack of transparency where the market agent can tell the farmer that, you know, I sold your spinach for R5 because that was the average price on the day, whereas actually they could have sold it for more. You know, and then the penny dropped when we started playing detective. So what we did with one of our farmers, Daniel, in Soweto, we decided to follow the price journey. So we decided to follow where does Daniel's spinach actually end up. And it really changed when we realized that his spinach made it to canteens. It made it to the formal market. But the way that it got there was had so many middlemen across the chain where that bunch of spinach that Daniel had, you know, you and I end up buying it for probably 29 Rand or for 36 Rand, depending on which retailer you buy from. And that's probably half of the bunch that he sold, because he may have sold a 10 leaf bunch, but they could break it into four leaves to get one bunch. And essentially you had 70 Rand worth of value created, but the farmer only got, you know, 2.50 Rand or 3 Rand of that entire chain. And that's when we set out to solve the problem. That's when we got Jackson on board, who's our CTO, and he built the first version of the app. And so the story of Kula is not really a light bulb or a lightning moment where, you know, lightning hit us and we were like, wow, this is what we're going to go and solve. It was driven by observations on the ground and just working with a real user base.
So those farmers that you obviously were based at in terms of their farms, you know, just doing some research, understanding their business models, their processes, their flows, etc. Were they the first incumbents that you tested the app on once upon development phase?
Yeah, so there was no app initially. And once the app got ready, we went to them. And, you know, the interesting route that we've taken as Kula is that we're very much pro the pilot approach. We don't want to go to the public saying, hey, we're ready to go use the platform when we're not sure about it. We need to test it with real users. So yes, they were the first cohort that used the platform. They told us that, hey, you know, Mtanam, the font is too small, or the font is too big, or this button is not clear, or actually, you know, that doesn't make sense, that makes sense. And we've constantly iterated. So the product that we have today, I always tell the team, you know, for every button, I can tell you why it's there and I can tell you how it came about. When you log on to our inputs app, the first thing you'll see is a bulk buying feature that came from a farmer, Gerald, out in Brits. We've got sectioning by bugs and targets. That also came from another farmer out in Turandot. So every feature, every click and every button has been driven by the users, because at the end of the day, as you said, you know, Caritas is not a farmer, Matt is not a farmer, and we're not building the Cooler Inputs app for Caritas or Matt, or Jackson or Wandile. We're building it for farmers, and it's important that they take the driving seat in terms of what we built, and that's the approach that we went with. And hence now we're in a position where we can, we'll be releasing a product to the public, but this product is 3 years in the making, you know, 3 years in the making, and in live testing with real farmers.
Yeah, and how easy or difficult was it to convince the farmers to actually start using the app? Because I know farmers are very set in their ways, you know, to bring them something, yeah, to say, this could help you in terms of smoothening the process between yourself and a prospective buyer. How easy or difficult was it for them to just say, I think I'd give this a try? And, you know, for them, I mean, it's one thing to just give them a phone or let them download the app and then started using it from day one. It's very important, yeah, for them to continue interacting with the platform and the site. So, you know, just maybe, did you go through certain challenges as well? You know, obviously, yeah, onboarding farmers is one thing, but them to use the platform on an ongoing basis is another. So how receptive were the farmers towards Cooler, and how did you walk that journey with them to obviously ensure that they continue to use the app on a consistent basis, so to bridge the gap between the farmer and the market?
Yeah, so I think it was tough. I think farmers, you know, farmers have been messed around for so long. They've been sold many dreams by many people. And I think when you come to a farmer, that first interaction is about that they've heard so many people walking on their farm telling them, look, I'm going to change your life. And this thing that I'm bringing to you, you know, is the next best thing after sliced bread. And I think one thing we learned is that farmers respond to value. Farmers respond to tangible value. And I think the market access angle really helped to put our foot in the door. I think, for example, you know, with Daniel, once we saw the challenges he was facing in the physical fresh produce market, we then decided, look, Daniel, we'll go out and we'll help you find alternative markets. And we literally started with a pick and pay in Bryanston, where we went to them and we showed them Daniel's spinach. I remember I went to them a couple of times and they rejected us and they told us about how we need to be added as a supplier. And it got to a point where I actually gave them the spinach for free to put on their shelves. And the customers bought that spinach, I think, within an hour. And then they wanted to buy more. So, and from that, because this early cohort of farmers were seeing that we were actually helping them find alternative markets. So we were helping them find better pricing. So once they saw the value that we brought to the table, then the response was much more positive. Farmers are not about talk, because so much talk has been done around agriculture. So much talk has been done around support. But we needed to bring real tangible value to the table, which is alternative markets. Like some of the farmers that we have the strongest relationships with at the moment are farmers who are selling their products in our fresh produce marketplace pilot, but are also buying the inputs through our inputs app, because they know that when they buy on the inputs app, the prices are a lot lower, especially because you're buying directly from these mega suppliers. A lot of the prices are a lot lower than what you would find in the market. They know that the products will get delivered physically. So to answer your question, we needed to bring real tangible value and not just talk. And farmers respond better when they know that you're giving them real tangible value, even though the app wasn't working, but we were still manually moving product for farmers into supermarkets, into canteens, into various formal market players. And because of that, they were more patient. Because of that, they were able to allow us to work with us as we got the app ready. So the relationships were existing, the trade was existing even before the app went live.
Yeah, because my follow-up question there was to ask, how does a farmer interact with the marketplace function of Kula before we get to the input section, right? So I'm a farmer, I've got my green beans ready. So what do I do? I put my green beans onto the Kula platform and say, I've got, I don't know, 5 pallets ready for sale. Do I put in my farm gate price? And then do I wait for a buyer to accept? Just maybe talk us through that process. How does a farmer interact with the app?
Yeah, awesome. So on the marketplace side, I'll just qualify that it is in pilot with a select group of farmers, but I'll talk you through what's going on with the pilot. So the idea here, one, is that we don't charge for it. I think that's very important to put out there, that there's no upfront, you know, you don't pay a lot of money just to sign up or some sort of subscription. We'll only take a fee once we have done what we have promised. And the idea there is that the farmer can engage directly with the supplier. So if you are a farmer, first of all, we would do, would come to your farm to do an assessment. To see if you meet the relevant quality checks. The importance of that is that with a fairly new platform like Kula, it's important that the reputation that we build with the farmers that we have on the platform is a good one. Because if one farmer delivers rotten potatoes to a client, they won't just say that farmer was bad, they'll say Kula farmers are bad. That's why we need to ensure that we go through the quality checks. And then once you're on board, it's a fairly easy process where essentially you load the products that you have. So for example, you can say, you know, I'm on a 20 hectare and I've got 20 hectare under production, but I'm harvesting, let's say, whatever number of tons, whatever number of pallets every single week. So that allows a buyer to not only see what you have for them now, but to also see what you what you're going to have over the long run. So we've got two ways of selling on our fresh produce marketplace. The one is what we call the spot market. That's where a buyer buys from you, Mbali, on a once-off basis, where it's like, okay, I'm really short of tomatoes. Mbali has tomatoes. Let me get her tomatoes. But if they receive those tomatoes and they're good, and then they buy from you on the spot market again, and they're still good, then a lot of the buyers actually prefer to operate in a program environment. So they'll say to you, okay, Mbali, let's get into a relationship where now you can supply us over for this particular season, over this entire season, with this particular variety of this particular crop. And then you can pre-negotiate and put all the various terms of that particular trade all on the system, you know, delivery terms, you know, the various third-party service providers that you need. All of that is able to happen on the system. So it's not just the buyers. We've also brought in third-party service providers. I'm actually going to get in trouble because I'm revealing a lot, but we've brought in a lot of third-party service providers. So for example, you need pallets. You need we brought in the likes of CHEP. You need logistics for your trade to go through. So for example, a formal market retailer is not going to be able to, they're not going to take your delivery if it's coming from a broken down truck or a truck that doesn't meet the necessary food safety requirements. So we've partnered with the likes of Imperial, and we've basically made this a holistic environment that allows trade to happen and trade to go through. Kula does not at any point negotiate on behalf of Mbali. Mbali engages with the buyer directly and agrees on the buying terms on the trade terms with the buyer on the platform, and Kula does not get involved in that. And we've also worked in a really cool payments feature, which I might also get in trouble for, but it's a really cool payment feature that allows you, without getting into too much detail, but to trust a new buyer. Because one of the things that if someone walks onto your farm now, Mbali, and says, hey, I would like to buy so many tons of your product, your first question is, you know, can this person pay? And then if you go to a buyer, for the first time and say, I can supply you, the buyer's question is, can you actually supply the quality that I want? And we've worked with the biggest agri-bank on the continent in building a really cool payment solution that essentially solves for that issue. But ultimately, it's you and the buyer, not Kula, no middleman. You set the terms, you discover the price, you agree on price, you're able to load what's ready for harvest, you're able to load what's also upcoming. Without revealing too much and getting myself into trouble, I'm going to stop there. But it's in pilot and we'll be rolling it out. It's going to be really exciting.
Yeah, so this is fantastic. I mean, because in addition to my question from how the farmer interacts with the platform, you've obviously then answered my question in terms of how does the buyer interact with the platform. So now my question to you is then how does Kula make its money? If you're not charging farmers, I didn't hear you say anything about charging the buyers, how are you making your money?
Yes. So our business model throughout all of our platforms is that we will never charge until we've done the thing that we've promised. So all of our products are absolutely free until we've done the thing that we have promised to do.
So what's the
again, you're going to get me into trouble here. Alistair is going to kill me. But the current fee on the fresh produce market is only taken on the once a successful trade has been completed. And it's a sliding scale of a very low percentage. So if you look at the benchmark of what the fresh produce markets are charging, it is less than a fourth of that. you're going to get me into big trouble. You already have. But it's almost somewhat insignificant, and it's on a sliding scale, depending on how much volume you move and how regularly you trade on the platform. And what we've done, maybe a key thing to mention on the fresh produce market, is that our whole approach is that we need to stick to what we're good at. So what we've done, we've brought someone onto the team who is the former head of procurement at Spar, one of the leading retailers. And he's come on board and he's leading the charge on how our fresh produce marketplace is being built. And the reason for that is that, again, even the buying platform is not being built for Caritas to use. It's not being built for Kula to use. Ultimately, it's being built for formal market retailers to use at the end of the day. So you want the guy that I would have been pitching to say, hey, can you please adopt Kula, to be the one who comes into the team and actually builds out that platform. And over the past year, Alistair has been doing incredibly amazing work. And his experience is not just on the buying side by being head of procurement at one of the major retailers. He actually ran one of the major commercial farms in the country for almost a decade. So a lot of what we're building is coming from a farmer perspective and from a buyer perspective, understanding those nitty-gritties. But you are going to get me into big, big trouble, and you already have.
Sorry about that. You know, just know that I'm asking from an entrepreneur's perspective, and I'm asking from a farmer's perspective as well. So, yeah, I think you can forward all the concerns from your team to me, and I'll handle that accordingly.
I'll blame you.
Yeah, you know what? It's such a great thing that you guys have spotted to obviously be strategic on the type of people that you hire, you know, and the type of experience that they have, because it's very, very important to have someone who has walked the path or the journey within retail or understanding how farming works. Because, geez, I mean, a lot of the projects that we see are on the ground happening, you know, it's all fair and well and comes from good intentions for people trying to make a difference in the industry. But, you know, a number of them fail because they don't bring experienced personnel who understand the different dynamics that is involved in agriculture. I'm sure we can also have a conversation offline with a couple of partners that you've brought on. There's one specific that you've mentioned. It's great to have them as a service provider, but I know in terms of the way that their business model works, and especially the type of farmers that you guys have worked with and brought on board, or you know, developed the Kula app from a pilot element. Their business model and the type of farmers that are going to be using Kula or have used Kula before might be a bit expensive for the farmers, but we can have that conversation offline.
Absolutely. As a point
of interest, absolutely. Understand further. Yeah, but I think with what you've done on the fresh produce element, it's really commendable work.
Absolutely. I think, you know, the current leading players in the industry and the current leading role players are actually looking to solution for emerging and small-scale farmers. The issue is that the cost to serve to date has been very high. So it has not made business sense, you know, to go out, for example, you know, to one farmer who's 200 kilometers away on a 5-hectare who's going to end up buying one bag of fertilizer. It hasn't made commercial sense. And I think part of what Kula is bringing to the table for a lot of these leading industry players is to build a business case for that. And technology helps to level that playing field. And all of the partners that we're engaging with are working with us to say, how do we make this make sense, you know, for the current cohort of farmers that you have? And that's why the pilot approach is so important, because it's not Caritas speaking on behalf of the farmer particularly, but it's the farmer in the room being able to voice out that the reason I will not use your services or the reason I don't use your services is because of reason X and reason Y. And the reason I don't use the services is because of that reason and that reason. And then collectively, we work together to find a solution. And only then do you come out of pilot. And that's why we haven't wanted to make a noise, because it takes time and it takes a lot of testing. It takes involvement, not just from our side, not just from the farmer side, but even from the partner side, to see how do we best make this work. And only once we're comfortable do we then go out into the public eye, like we have now with the Inputs app, to begin rolling out.
Awesome. So take me through the Input Marketplace. What is it about, and how's the reception been from your users since you guys have launched?
Awesome. So the Inputs app, you know, is again, it has been born from us listening a lot. And initially, we set out to solve the market access problem. That was our initial thing that we set out to do, to just help connect farmers directly to market. But then, as mentioned, you know, the issues around certification, a formal market buyer is not going to buy from a farmer who does not have the right certification. And that put us in a very difficult position, Bali, where we had about 80% or so of our user base who did not have the right certification, you know, who did not have the right requirements that they need for them to be able to trade with the formal market. And what we did is that instead of neglecting them, we started looking into how do we actually help them get, you know, the right products that they need and the right services for them to get to a point where they get certification. And the analogy behind that and the thinking and the philosophy that we've adopted is that the only way to truly help a farmer in the long run is to give them fair and equitable access to a reliable and sustainable market over time. And the Input Marketplace is for that, not necessarily just for that 80%, but it's a starting point to allow any farmer anywhere in the country to have access to the exact same certified products and the exact same services that a commercial farmer, for example, would be able to have access to. And in doing this, we've brought in various role players. So, for example, we've got over 190 crop advisors across the country that are ready to assist on our platform. We've got over 132 depots that we're plugged into through the partnerships that we have that allow us not only to deliver product direct to farm, but to deliver a basket of goods close in one location that's close to that particular farmer. And the idea behind the Inputs app is really just helping to level the playing field. So one of the interesting observations we've done over the last few months, you know, we compared, you know, what, because a lot of our suppliers are already supplying to commercial farmers. We compared the prices that are being paid on the commercial side versus the prices that we've listed on the Kula app and on the Kula Inputs app. And we realized that our prices were only about 3% or so higher than what they were or what they are on the commercial side, which is a big, big leap, considering that a lot of emerging farmers who are not necessarily buying at commercial scale are actually buying from probably the fourth or the fifth person in the chain, meaning that the prices that they pay are actually higher in a lot of cases. And the reason behind that as well is that we haven't even wanted to stick to the list prices. We wanted farmers, in the same way in the fresh produce market side, that they engage with buyers, we allow them to engage with suppliers. So a farmer can add into a basket what they need to buy for the season and collect various quotations, allow them to get discounts on the products that they need for their farm. So it's really about allowing fair and equitable access where a farmer knows where to start. If you look at services, for example, the quality of services that a lot of emerging farmers receive, you know, it's only as good as their advice that they get from their next door neighbor. where it's like, I need someone to do scouting for this particular thing. And it's like, hey, my neighbor, do you know someone who can do this? Or do you know someone who can do that? And quite often that doesn't give them the same level to the same quality of services that's available out there. And the Inputs app really puts any farmer anywhere in the position where they've got the access to the exact same products and the exact same services. And we pulled in not only local players, but also international players. So we've got over 100 suppliers to start with, you know, the likes of Syngenta, Bayer, some of the biggest names internationally. We've got their products loaded on our system. And the idea is to help make the process a lot more efficient, but to give equitable access to someone who's just started that a commercial farmer would have access to, if that makes sense.
Wow, Caritas, it sounds like you have done immense work from just thinking about this input marketplace and bringing stakeholders on board. And, you know, people often say that, you know, a lot of the problems that we experience or face in agriculture can definitely be solved by technology. And when people look into the entrepreneurship landscape, you know, and obviously coming up with certain solutions to solve problems that exist in any industry, everybody obviously thinks of an app, you know, but it's one thing to start an app, but I think it's very important to emphasize that the app is not the business. You know, there's a whole lot of things that go behind starting and formalizing that business and making it a viable one. So with all these stakeholders that you've mentioned, you know, international input, international companies that manufacture input supplies, etc., take us through that journey of engaging with them, you know, starting conversations and letting them buy into your business model. Like, how was that like from an entrepreneur's perspective? You know, was it easy? Did you have to, you know, draw fancy pictures for them to understand into your model?
Yeah.
I mean, it's commendable that you have all these partners, but I can understand that it must have taken a lot of work behind the scenes to get these partners on board.
Yeah. So I think, as you said, you know, I think, you know, tech has moved away from, you know, the social media era, where you just build an app and people use it. I think in agriculture, it's got a heavy on the ground component. It's got a heavy touch and feel component. And I think the first thing we needed to sort out was distribution. And that's why the partners that we've decided to work with have been so absolutely key. And you know, the first partner we got on board was ACI, Plant Health. And they've got a massive, massive distribution network that these international companies already use and that they already plugged into. So through the relationship with ACI, we were able to sort of, it was easier to get them on board because Kula was essentially an additional layer and a further enhancer on the already existing distribution network. And not only a further enhancer on the existing distribution network, allowing them to also access a segment of the market that they've kind of been struggling to be able to access. So it's been really about making the right strategic relationships. You know, the one angle could have been, you know, Caritas trying to get on a call with 100 suppliers, you know, trying to find a contact at Syngenta and a contact here and then a contact here and there, but actually working with leading players in the space made that process a lot easier because they've already got those avenues, they've already got those relationships, and they've already got the distribution channel. So the key word on the input marketplace side is the distribution component. The fact that we can get you know, that bag of fertilizer, that bag of chems directly to your doorstep at the farm or to your nearest depot, that was very appealing. And that's what helped to get them easily on board, especially because you're not coming in blank as Kula, the tech startup, but you're coming in, you know, with ACI Plant Health, you're coming in with Sakata, you're coming in with MSD, you know, you're coming in with Kainoch, you're coming in with names and players that they're already playing with. And that makes it a lot easier. And that's why at Kula, we are not confused about what we do. We are a tech company. You know, we're not a farm, we're not a distributor, we don't own trucks, we don't own farms. We are good at the tech and we stick to the tech, and the tech is there to enhance what is already happening in the industry, to make it more efficient and to allow it to grow exponentially. Because even without a cooler, even without a tech solution, food is on the shelves. You know, you can't say when you go to the supermarket, you're not going to find your banana there. You know, so we are an enabler, and we've stuck to that, and we've let our partners do what they do best, and we've stuck to what we do best.
Right. So for on both ends of the spectrum, how does a farmer interact with the cooler input marketplace, and how does a supplier interact with a cooler marketplace?
Awesome. So from a farmer side, it's fairly simple. It's available on all the major app stores, Huawei, Apple, and Android. A farmer can easily create a profile. We don't need to approve them. Even if you're not a farmer and you're just a person or an institution that buys on behalf of farmers, you can easily get access on there. And the idea, you know, is not really even for you to use it. It's almost we want you to test it out, to try it out. So you would know, Mbali, that if you're buying inputs, you know, for the season, you want to compare quotation. So you know there's this service provider X who supplies you with that product, and maybe three of them will supply with a similar product. The way you would go about it now is that you're going to call service provider one and say, send me a quotation for this and that. Service provider two, send me a quotation for this and that. Service provider three, send me a quotation for this and that. Wait for the quotation, send them follow-up emails and all of that. So the inputs app is essentially to help streamline that process in a much easier way. You easily get on the app, you put the products on your basket, and then you get a quotation from the various suppliers, which you can compare to even some of the current quotations that you have. And in that quotation process, you can actually engage with one of the crop advisors to say, look, the quotation you're giving me, for example, is 80K, and I've got one right next to me from an X supplier that I've been using, and they are coming at me with 75K, for example. Can you beat that quote? And it allows you to have that conversation with an experienced crop advisor who helps, you know, get the quotation as to the best of their ability to a point where it makes sense. And then you make the final purchasing decision. So on the farmer side, it's easier signing up, adding the products that you need, and engaging with our crop advisor network, who then help guide you with the quotation, who can also say, look, don't use that product because it's going to damage this and that. You don't use that product, use that product. Maybe recommend a different product. Maybe this one is cheaper, until you get to a point where you ultimately agree. And again, you're not talking to cooler, you're talking to an experienced crop advisor, or you're talking directly to the supplier. On the supplier side, we have a really cool supplier dashboard that they use, which means when you place an order to the supplier, it comes over to them and they see that, okay, Mbali has placed an order, and there are people on their side who operate that supplier dashboard. Mbali's placed an order for this particular product and for that particular product, and then she has requested a discount, for example, and then they're able to offer a discount from the system using our supplier dashboard. Again, as cooler, we've stuck to the tech, we've built the tech, but then it's Mbali at the end of the day and the supplier who have the conversation about the pricing. Or it's Mbali and the crop advisor who have the conversation about the pricing, about the discount, about basically everything that goes into that particular order. And cooler has just created a platform that makes that a whole lot easier, and that makes that a whole lot more seamless than how things are currently being done at the moment.
Awesome. And with the platform itself and how both parties engage or interact with the platform, from a farmer's perspective, you know, there are farmers who would go onto the platform and perhaps don't know what they're buying, right?
Yes.
How do you solve that problem? Because right now, what you've just said, it's all about a quotation basis. And I'm just thinking that it's a farmer like myself, for example, who knows what they buy. Yes. So I know what fertilizers I already use on my farm, what I need to buy to maybe deal with powdery mildew or, you know, white flies, etc. Yes. So when I, as Mbali, use a cooler platform, cooler input marketplace platform, I already know what I'm searching for. But how are you solving the problem for the farmers who are not serviced by sales reps, meaning they don't come to their farms? And I'm hearing this interview and I'm saying, okay, I think the way to beat this problem is going on to the cooler input marketplace. And then they go on to the cooler input marketplace, but they don't know what they need to buy, you know? How are you solving that challenge?
Yeah, so that's something that we're constantly going to get even better at. But what we've done on the home screen, as you land on the top right, it's got a filtering section, which means that sometimes you don't know what you need to buy, but you know what the bug you're facing is, or you know what you want to target. So you can filter what you see on the app by bugs. So if, for example, you have leaf miner, for example, you have pod mite, depending on what you may be experiencing on the farm, we can show you products that are registered for that particular bug. Or you can filter by various categories. So for example, you say you're looking for products for crop nutrition. You can apply that filter on the homepage. Say you're looking for a product for crop protection. Say you're looking for seed products for a particular crop. You can easily use those filters, which will guide you in terms of what to look for. And then when you sign up, we also ask you, what are you actually planting? And then by the time you log into the app, you'll find that the products are already grouped according to your crop. So when you scroll down, if I'm planting cabbages, I can easily click on cabbages and see that there's 190 products that are registered for cabbages, or that are registered for crop nutrition for cabbages, or that are registered for crop protection for cabbages, or that are registered for bud mite for cabbages. So we've basically essentially added these additional layers of filtering to allow to shrink the overall product size, because we have over, you know, around 3,000 products already. That can be very overwhelming, but we want to allow for that filtering process, where you can either use the bugs that you're facing, you can use the products that you're planting, or you can say, you know, fertilizer for this specific crop. It kind of shrinks the product list as far as possible. But another important avenue is that once you've added them on there, in the process of creating a quotation, you can actually chat to a crop advisor. So yes, you may not have someone who comes in and walks your farm who's necessarily a sales rep, but during the quotation process, you can tell the crop advisor that, look, this is what I want. I'm not sure what to buy, but the thing that I want to do is this and that and that and that. And then they can easily recommend the specific products that you would need to buy to basically deal with those issues that you want to address. So if the filtering and the categories and the layouts that we've gone into, I mean, you can even go through the products by suppliers. You know, if maybe you know there was an Adama specific product that did something, but you're not sure what the name of it is, you can even go via the route of the supplier. But once you're in this process of creating a quotation, that conversation with the crop advisor brings in that human element. And we fully understand that agriculture is a touch and feel industry. So in that process, you have a conversation to say, I'm looking for something that will do this and that. And you have an experienced, approved and certified crop advisor on the other side who's going to advise you just as good as a sales rep would have done for you on farm.
Awesome. And just for farmers as well, when they're using the input marketplace, is there a service fee that farmers will be charged? So for example, I've bought my goods worth 80,000 rand. Yes. I click on the checkout. So how do you,
yes,
how do I pay for the logistics? Is there like 80,000 plus, I don't know, you know, 50 yeah. rand delivery fee? How does that look like?
Awesome. That's actually one of my favorite parts. So what we've done is that we haven't wanted, one, to charge the farmer unnecessarily. And two, we haven't wanted to add to the price, because a lot of marketplaces add to the price in order for them to make, you know, their margins back. You know, what product that you buy direct from a restaurant versus from a food delivery service, the food delivery service price is usually higher. So what we've done, and it's quite fascinating that you spoke about sales reps, is that we've said to the supplier kind of looks at Kula as a salesperson or as a digital sales channel. And then we engage with the suppliers and reach, you know, agreements with the suppliers where they basically reward us for finding them a lead. So if Mbali buys from them through Kula, the supplier will reward us through a predetermined conversation with them for finding them that particular lead, which means that Mbali does not pay Kula for what she checks out on the inputs app, and nor does Kula add an additional cost to the price because it's listed on the inputs app. And then when it comes to delivery, it's free if you're going to pick it up from the depot for smaller orders. So we don't necessarily charge you for that, to pick it up from your depot. And the beauty of picking it up from the depot is that you can now pick up a basket of goods. So instead of going one place for seeds, one place for animal health, one place for this and that, you can go to one location and pick up a full basket of goods. But if an order currently is at 20,000 Rand, but we actually are moving that further down. But if an order is above 20,000 Rand, the delivery is free because the economies of scale make sense. So we're actually able to deliver it directly to your farm. So which means essentially we're not even charging or directly charging the delivery cost. And the beauty of being plugged into this distribution network is that these products are going to be moving around nationwide anyway. And we've come in to enhance that, which limits the cost on the farmer side. And over time, makes our pricing incredibly competitive, because also you're not now buying it from the fourth or the fifth person in the chain. You're getting it straight from supplier, and it gets to you in a much more efficient way.
This is amazing, Caritas, because you've literally thought of every single loophole that exists throughout this entire process, from a farmer buying inputs to the inputs getting to their farm, you know. And it seems like you've obviously found solutions to all these very, very small challenges that exist, because this is predominantly why a number of farmers, and I suppose in this group, let's say emerging farmers for the purpose of this conversation, this is a reason why a number of emerging farmers really don't stay long in the agricultural sector, because of the lack of support or the lack of service from input suppliers. And I think you've solved the problem on one end for farmers, but I also see that in the way that you've designed your business model, you've also solved the problem on the other end from a supplier perspective, because not a lot of suppliers like to deal with hundreds of small scale or small sized farms. You know, it becomes quite a nightmare and a headache for them to deal with hundreds of these farmers all buying in small quantities. So you've kind of aggregated everything. But I know you guys recently announced that, you know, you have won a series of funding from investors. How was that journey like? You know, how long did it take you to convince investors to buy into this model? You know, what did you have to do? I mean, to obviously get investors to buy into the Cooler model and obviously show them the impact that you're making in the industry.
Yeah, so I think that was quite a fascinating process. I think it was very much around, you know, what kind of investor we wanted at the table. We did not want an investor that was going to sit with me at the end of the quarter and ask me why the profits are down or why the profits are up. We wanted an investor that would come in and build with us and work with us in getting the solution across the line. So that was a big requirement for us. And I think probably a big element of advice that I would give to a lot of entrepreneurs is that, you know, especially at early stage, you want an investor that ties into your business model, that ties who's, and the best way to describe, you know, our current investor is that their success in the long term depends on a solution like Cooler. And that's why it was quite sensible for them to want to get on board, for them to be willing to jump on board. And it was really a process of sort of negotiating. But the nice thing about, you know, the position that we're at is that the work we're already doing was generating revenues. So one of the key things and key points of advice I would give is that you want to limit money as a discussion point as far as possible in the negotiation process. And what I mean by that is that if you're having a conversation with the investor around whether they should be giving you X million or X million, you might find that money is actually not your biggest problem. Your biggest problem, for example, our case would have been distribution. And in our conversation with ACI, you know, distribution was a key part of the deal to say we want access to that distribution network. We want access to that crop advisor network. We want access to those international relationships. So even beyond the monetary amount, the deal coming on board, you know, what is key to the success of our business model as a whole. And I think that's a key discussion point to have. But you want to be, you want an investor who's, and this is probably the best way to put it from a tech perspective, but you want someone who is tied, where you're joined at the hip, where your success has significant implications to their business model. And for at an early stage for me and for the team, it's the kind of investor that we wanted to go for, because today, every single day we're executing with them. You know, every Monday, Wednesday, Tuesday, whatever, we're executing together. We're completing input marketplace orders together. We're working together as a team collectively to get this across. And for me, at an early stage, that's the best kind of investor you want at the table, as opposed to someone who's going to give you X rands and then at the end of the quarter, at the end of the financial year, asking you why the graph is pointing downwards.
Fantastic. That's wise. But to conclude our conversation, Caritas, I want to know, how has the Cooler team grown from just you and Matt a few years ago, you know, going around different farms, etc., to obviously now having investors and having an input marketplace officially launched into the industry? And what is next for Cooler?
Yeah, so the team has grown quite significantly. I think even in the growth of the team, you know, I was so excited when we did the funding round because I thought, wow, we're going to have such a big team. It's going to lighten the load, but the load has grown further than the team. But yeah, we've brought on a lot of experience on the team. I mean, we've got Ayanda, who's our COO, who's an attorney. She was working at Adams & Adams and she joined the team and she plays a key role, you know, from a legal perspective, but also from an operation perspective. I think I've mentioned Alistair already, who has huge experience, you know, on the farming side, running a commercial farm, but also huge experience on the buying side, working at one of the major retailers as a head of procurement. And one of our real strengths, our real secret weapon, is in our dev team. We have an absolutely amazing product team. Every Cooler product is built in-house. It's not outsourced. It's built by us in-house. And we've got a full-time team of really, really amazing developers that are constantly working. And the beauty of that is that if DK or Dineo is out on the farm, you know, and they pick up feedback from a farm and they pick up a problem, they know they call the product team and that problem gets solved immediately. And that's probably the most unsung heroes of Cooler, is that the bulk of our team is actually made up of coders. And it's such a beautiful process because not all of them actually sit in South Africa. Some of them are in Swaziland, some of them are in Lesotho, some of them are even in Zim. And this is our full-time Cooler team. And I think it speaks as well to the times that we are currently operating in. In terms of where Cooler is going, I think it's built for the global market. It's not necessarily built for South Africa. South Africa is a starting point. And that's why we're not confused about who we are. We are not a farm. We are not a logistics company. We are the tech, and the tech needs to be able to plug into various ecosystems. We've received many shouts from Malawi, many shouts from Swaziland, many shouts from Namibia. I mean, I was in Kenya just a year ago, invited up there by the government to look at how we could roll out Cooler there. And even beyond the Africa experience, we see South America as a big, big opportunity. But obviously, in line with the pilot model that we've gone with, we need to get it right here at home first. Need to get it right here at home, but the business is built in such a way that it can plug into other ecosystems.
Hey man, like, yeah, I think you guys have done phenomenal work, and it's so great to hear that the team has grown, especially obviously tapping into other different African countries. So you definitely using so many skills and developers with different talents, which is, I think, is commendable. And it goes to show that agriculture can absorb so many different professions. You know, there's so many opportunities that exist within agriculture. It doesn't only start and end at the farming or primary level. So congratulations to the success of Cooler.
Thank you.
No doubt that you guys will keep on succeeding and reaching to new heights. And I suppose I should just get Green Terrace on board with the input marketplace and just start trading on the platform.
Awesome. Awesome. No, we'd love that. I think DK or Dineo could definitely pay you a visit.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Caritas, for your time. And I think we'll touch base soon. All the best.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time, Bali, and the opportunity. I think we really appreciate the work that you are doing. I think people like you are, the voice for many farmers. They keep interest in the industry. I think never underestimate the work that you're doing. I think it's absolutely crucial, and it's absolutely important that, that farmers are heard, that farmers are given access to these opportunities. There's probably people listening to your podcast that I probably would not have come across Cooler unless they'd listened to it. And I think the work that you're doing as well is amazing.
Thank you. Thank you, Caritas. Thank you for listening to this episode. Your feedback is always important. Therefore, please rate and review this podcast. You can follow me on social media at Mbali Nwoko on Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, as well as YouTube. Should you wish to contact me directly, kindly send me an email at info@mbalinwoko.com. Look out for next week's episode. Until then, take care.